So part of the fasting from talking made me much more attuned to other sounds and, frankly, to listening to God, where God is found in nature, in the chapel, in my own reflections, as well as in prayers that I'm reading or praying.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. This is part of our mini-series about meditation and contemplative worship, and we're going to dig into silent retreats. And whether that sounds so exciting to you or strikes sheer terror into your heart at being quiet for that long, this, I think, will be a very interesting discussion. I'm in studio with Heather Bigley, our senior producer.
Hello.
And producer James Studevant.
Hello, hello.
James, what should we be listening for?
I think she tells some really wonderful stories about her experiences with going to the silent retreats at Holy Cross Abbey, but also what that's done for her throughout her life, not just specifically while she's on those retreats.
Mm. And I would encourage you as you listen to be thinking, if you were to go on a silent retreat, what would make it good for you? Some would say people to talk to. Okay, that's off the list. But what would you want to include in your own silent retreat? What would you include, Heather?
I think what I'm really impressed with is the natural beauty that surrounds Holy Cross Abbey. And I can see why that would be so crucial. And for me, being able to step outside and look at that beautiful sky, night or day, I think would be lovely.
A silent retreat in downtown Cleveland might not be quite the, or any big city, just right. It would be lacking something that is there. I would agree. And I got to meet Reverend Susan Bentley because we were there at the same retreat. We did not speak to each other the whole time. I was dying to reach out to the other people because they seemed so interesting to me. And we were sitting mere feet apart, pouring water for each other and not talking. But I did leave a note by her plate to invite her to speak.
The Reverend Susan Bentley is a retired Episcopal priest in Southern Virginia, and she works as a chaplain at Roanoke Memorial Hospital. And this is part of our mini-series on contemplation. So check out our earlier episode 225, where we talked to a Quaker couple in Maryland about what it means to silently worship. But we also have upcoming episode 228, where Steve interviews the monks at Holy Cross Abbey. And also episode 229, where we're going to discuss Henry Nouwen's spiritual direction in a book club episode.
So I started at the interview with Reverend Susan Bentley by just asking how she feels God speaks to her at a silent retreat.
I actually heard about silent retreats in the late 1970s. I was a Christian ed director at a church in Raleigh, North Carolina. But for continuing education, I audited classes at Duke Divinity School with the Reverend Dr. John Westerhoff, who was a very noted professor of practical theology. He's written a number of books. He's deceased now. And he told students that every quarter he took a week-long silent retreat. That was the first time I ever heard anybody mention it. And it intrigued me at the time. But I never really thought about it for myself. Then some years later, when I was married, my husband mentioned that his father, who was a Roman Catholic, would make retreats at Holy Cross Abbey in Berryville, Virginia, which I also had no experience of. And I don't think Michael, my husband, knew too much about what that was like for his father, but he just knew he'd gone there. So I had my interest piqued again, but it took a long time before I either had time off from my parish commitments or our family commitments that I felt like I could actually take time to go. And there are Episcopal retreat centers with Episcopal orders, but I was kind of inclined to go see Holy Cross Abbey. It's only 3 hours from where we live. And I liked the connection with my father-in-law, whom I never knew. He was deceased by the time I was married. So I went to Holy Cross Abbey not knowing really what to expect or anything about it. And it turned out to be a wonderful renewing gift for me.
What is it about a silent retreat? Some people might panic actually to think of being quiet for that long. Do you plan what you might consider or think about, or are you in prayer, or are you just being open and enjoying nature? There's just this whole variety of ways I think people could use a retreat like this.
So my retreat time has evolved. And as you mentioned, most people say to me, oh gosh, I couldn't be silent for 24 hours. So it's not anything that a lot of people that I talk to are really open to. So I was much more, I think, structured in the early years of my going to Holy Cross, that I would bring lots of books because I love books and they're like friends. And some years I kind of set up a schedule. I'm going to get up and, you know, have morning devotions and yoga practice and take a walk. And then over time, I really let go of some of that structure because for me, one of the real assets about being there is to have unstructured time where I have no commitments except going to meals. I'm not keeping a calendar. In the early days when I went to Holy Cross Abbey, there was no internet in the guest house, which was good. It's a mixed blessing that it's there now. But I really fell into a rhythm that I liked. I really liked to attend the services in the chapel and hear the monks chanting. The chanting for me really is a spiritual. I'm not participating in the liturgy, so I can't say it's a spiritual practice, but it's a way for me to be open to God. It's part of my prayer time. So that's a commitment, except for the early morning hours that I don't get up at 3 a.m. to go pray, because I also think sleep is a spiritual practice and part of my well-being. And because I'm not Roman Catholic and I am not able to receive communion at the Abbey, I also don't tend to go to the Eucharist. But that's part of my practice. Walking in nature is also a significant part of my prayer time. As you know from being there, it's just a beautiful piece of land high above the Shenandoah River. Years ago, they had many cows in the pastures, and they're not as many there now. They've had trouble with the farmers transitioning, but I like to meditate with the cows. I found the cows very, I don't know, I had some real interesting insights just meditating with the cows.
Okay, I just have to make the pun that cows are known as ruminants. And so they're ruminating, I suppose, as they chew their cud. I just see a connection.
Yeah, it's a wonderful connection. And I would just go and be standing along the pasture fences and kind of ruminate with the cows. So I would say my prayer time there is expanded. It's just not sitting down and using prayers from the prayer book, which can be a part of that for me, but it's also walking meditations and getting some real insights in nature. And one of the things that became very clear to me on my first retreat was a silent retreat is a little bit of a misnomer. It's really fasting from talking because there are lots of other sounds that one hears and that I hear when I'm there. Even if it's the scraping of chairs in the dining room, in the refectory where we're eating and not talking together, but you can hear the clink of silverware on people's plates and maybe the gentle sound of the refrigerator. And then outside, there are lots of sounds. So part of the fasting from talking made me much more attuned to other sounds and, frankly, to listening to God, where God is found in nature, in the chapel, in my own reflections, as well as in prayers that I'm reading or praying.
I'm really interested in how people perceive either being in the presence of God in prayer or contemplation. As you mentioned, there are so many different life circumstances. Sometimes you're helping someone who's very emotional or going through something difficult, and you may have a quick prayer, God lead me, God help me serve them, all the way to no agenda, I've got a quiet hour, I could pray or I could listen or just be. And I'm wondering, what are ways that you in your life have felt direction or answers or however you would call that from God?
Well, I feel very blessed having been working in the church for a number of years. I was a lay Christian professional before I was ordained because that gave me really opportunity to structure my life in an intentional way to try to hear God or to be mm-hmm. listening to God. And it's often in conversations. And I am an extrovert, so I like to talk. So in some ways, it's an anomaly that I also appreciate a silent retreat. But in conversation with others, I often get insights that I feel are inspired by the Holy Spirit. I worked with a Christian formation process for young children, 3 to 6 year olds, mostly, and then 6 to 9 year olds. They had amazing things to say about God. And I found that also nourishing for me, a way that God mm-hmm. interceded. Reading and preparing for sermons was also a way that I felt like I heard God speaking to me through the preparation and often through the preaching in ways I wasn't even quite aware of at the time. Like I'd start composing my sermon with a certain thought, and then it just evolved in a way that I had not really planned. I think the Holy Spirit was really working there. And right. then people would thank me for saying things that I said in my sermon that I never thought I said. Or they heard something in what I was saying that I hadn't said in direct words. So I was so grateful that the Holy Spirit and God were so present in Sunday morning worship for people. Because I didn't know everybody's spiritual needs, obviously. God did. And was using that time and my words to connect with people. But nature also is a significant way that I experience God. And I've come to see it as God's cathedral, where out in nature, one is surrounded by God 360. If we have eyes and ears to see and a mind that is open to receiving what God has to share with us.
This is a Catholic order. There are brothers there who live there all the time as monks and work there. There's not much interaction with them except one who is assigned to sort of oversee the retreat right. participants. So to you, that's just fine that you are an Episcopalian clergy member, but you can go to a Catholic retreat and you find something there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, while in some ways I would like to go to an Episcopal retreat house and be able to participate in the liturgy there, there's just not one that's geographically close and really as convenient. And I just am so appreciative of being a guest there and sort of in that same ecumenical way. They don't really know me, but I appreciate their hospitality. And as I mentioned, I just love the chanting. In fact, I was very isolated during COVID just because of a compromised immune system for me. And I wanted to go on retreat. And the guest house opened up before the chapel opened up at Holy Cross Abbey. But I said to myself, being able to attend services is such a significant part of my spiritual experience there that I'm not going to go until I can do that. I think, you know, largely because it is so meaningful and I don't have an opportunity to hear that chanting other than listening in an audio version and being in that sacred yeah. space. The chapel is sacred space.
Well, I certainly felt that as well. Are you able to point to moments from a retreat you may have gone to, whether this recent one or in the past, that sort of made some change in your spiritual life, that you learned something or took something away from your time there, beyond relaxation and rest, which I think are worthy goals all by themselves?
Right. I think that the biggest opportunity I've had there, and I think it evolved maybe after 2 retreats there, is the opportunity for me in particular to go and be unstructured, because I'm a pretty organized person, and to trust the process, so to speak, that going without being particularly organized about when I'm going to pray and, you know, how I'm going to structure my time would then bear fruit of connecting with God. So I think that's been my biggest insight going there over the years. But it took a couple of times to allow myself that. And I'll have to say that this particular time, because I retired from full-time parish ministry a year ago in June, I'm not juggling as much. I'm not juggling all the church responsibilities as well as my other commitments in my life. I was able to really relax and let go much faster than in the past.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Although I have to say, the day after I retired from the church where I'd been for 23 years, I went to Holy Cross Abbey for a retreat. Now, I should have taken 2 weeks, not just 1 week. But I knew that that was such a significant change in my life to leave this congregation. In the Episcopal Church, when you leave, you do not have contact with other people in that congregation to allow the separation necessary to prepare for the next clergy person. It was so healing to be in that beautiful space and to be able to rest, because retirement's a lot of work. Getting there is a lot of work. So it was physically, spiritually, and emotionally restful. So I don't know that I had any major insights, but I would say that going for that week right after I retired was the time I experienced the most care of me by God, if that makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
In that space, in that rhythm, I really felt enfolded by God, who just wanted me to be able to relax and rest in God in the beginning of this new season of life.
This is a very personal question, but did you have some sense that God was proud of you for all of these decades you had dedicated to that congregation? And maybe that's not the right word, pride, but almost a gratitude or a pat on the back, sort of well done, to be scriptural.
Yeah, I don't know that I allowed myself to receive that. I mean, hearing you say it, I think that's true, but I'm not sure that I allowed myself to say that. I'll tell you one other experience that I had. So I had a serious health episode in 2020 and was at Duke Medical Center in the cardiac ICU. It's kind of a heart and lung episode. That's a bizarre story that I won't go into. But I was in this ICU room for 18 days, and I made it my monastery. I felt like I was on a retreat. I didn't need high maintenance from the nursing staff, so I was really alone a lot, and part of the time I was there was during COVID, so they didn't allow visitors. I set up a small altar. I had some flowers there. I had a finger labyrinth. I had my Bible, my Book of Common Prayer. I had prayer cards. I had a rosary, and I felt like I was on a spiritual retreat, and I had my most significant encounters with God and Jesus during that time. And I think it was only because I had made silent retreats at Holy Cross Abbey that I could, in some ways, recreate that spiritual space for myself at that time.
You're listening to In Good Faith. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of the In Good Faith podcast, and I want to tell you about another in our family of BYU radio podcasts, an award-winning show with an award-winning host. This is Julie Rose on Top of Mind. Do you get turned off by the news because of how angry and polarizing and even depressing it can be? Doesn't anybody know how to have a civil conversation or weigh two competing ideas without a knee-jerk reaction that if you don't think what I think, you're a bad person? Check out the podcast, Top of Mind. They take one tough topic and they dive deep. And the goal is learning how to stay open and curious, even when you're confronted with different perspectives that may challenge us. Learning how to stick with the discomfort until we feel like we've actually learned and gotten some understanding. We may change our minds, we may not. But every episode will leave you feeling hopeful and empowered to become a better advocate for what does matter to you. Top of Mind, listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry, and I'm speaking with Reverend Susan Bentley from Southern Virginia. If you don't mind, I would love to know how you came to ministry. Did you grow up in a house of faith, and what brought you to that?
That was clearly God. I was brought up in kind of a nominal faith home, baptized Presbyterian, but my parents weren't really regular practitioners. But I had a high school art teacher, young. I'm sure it was her first job. She seemed a little bit older, but I don't think she was very long out of college. And she was a born-again Christian, and she kept asking me and some of our friends that were sort of her groupies, if I'd accepted mm-hmm. Jesus. That was never a language or a concept that I'd ever heard. And I remember the day that I made a commitment to Jesus because I wanted to be able to tell her the next time she asked me that, yes, I'd accepted Jesus. Now, I'm not sure that that's the best way to do that, but it started me on an intentional journey. And from that point on, I'd really been intentional about seeking to be part of faith communities. And I was working then as a Christian ed director when I turned 29, and I had one of those kind of vocational crises of like, what am I going to do with my life? I was still single. I'd worked at the college where I graduated doing student services, and I liked that, but I also really liked church work. And I went to see Dr. Westerhoff, the professor I'd studied with at Duke, who really was a spiritual mentor, and I said, you know, I'm having this vocational crisis. And he said, well, what do you see yourself doing 10 years from now? And I've never really been a person that was very good at visualizing where uh-huh. God might be leading me or even where I wanted to lead myself. But it just came out of my mouth. I want to be an Episcopal priest, or I see myself as an Episcopal priest. I am not ever thought I'd had that thought in my mind. I'd worshiped in the Episcopal Church after college. A friend took me, and I really loved the Episcopal Church. I think he had already seen a calling in me, but he outlined what I needed to do. One, become a confirmed Episcopalian to start with. And it's a long process in the Episcopal Church, which took almost 10 years. But he outlined the steps, and after that, all the pieces fell into place. And I felt this incredible peace, the peace that passes all understanding, once I'd said that. And I hadn't intended to say it. I think it was truly a calling.
I love that you heard it first coming out of your own mouth.
Right. I did. And I've had no regrets. I think there are other things I could have done. I think I could have done hospital chaplaincy, which I'm doing a little bit now. I think I could have been a good social worker, but I've loved parish ministry, and particularly in pastoral-sized congregations where relationships can really be fleshed out on the journey, grow with people on their spiritual journeys. The church that I served for 23 years had about 200 members. And when I left, of all the children that were there, I was the only minister they'd ever known.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
you mentioned in your bio a passion for, among other things, leading worship, preaching, pastoral care, teaching, but you mentioned spiritual direction. And I wonder if you would talk to me just a minute about what that means to you and how have you seen it help people like you when you went seeking to this mentor?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I have no formal training in spiritual direction. So just to be, you know, fully upfront about that. But over the years, people have seemed to come to me for spiritual conversations. And it's something that I like engaging with. And that started way back when I was a lay professional with high school youth groups. Some of the youth would come after school. We wouldn't call it formally spiritual direction, but I think that's what they were seeking without having the words in the language. So for me, it's conversation with people about where the Spirit is moving in their lives, what they're seeking, what they're searching, what they're questioning. Sometimes it has traditional spiritual language, and other times it doesn't. And over the years, I've gotten much more comfortable with saying, we don't always use all the same words for a shared experience. Like the people that come to Holy Cross Abbey that say maybe they don't really believe in God. Well, maybe they don't use that word God, but maybe it's some higher being. Maybe it's some presence beyond them. I try not to get focused on the language. So what I enjoy is being on the journey with people and hearing what their concerns are and how they're growing. And at the same time, I think I also grow through the conversations because I am a believer and I believe God is acting in their lives and that God believes in them, even though sometimes they don't believe in God. I just believe in a God that is ever present with all of God's creation, including humans.
That was Steve talking to Reverend Susan Bentley. One of the things I loved about this interview was the story that she shared about her experience in the hospital, because that's isolated outside of her experience at Holy Cross Abbey, but was really influenced by the silent retreats and what those could do for her spiritually and her connection with God that she got from that. In 2021, I had an experience where I was in the hospital. For me, that was kind of a crisis moment where I had a very powerful spiritual experience, and I don't have the experience of going to a silent retreat, right? But I turn to God in a way that I maybe hadn't before, because you kind of have that crisis and you turn to Him in the most sincere way that you can. And for me, that was kind of just a more sincere prayer. And I had a really wonderful spiritual experience from that. And I think for her, seeing that her reaction to being in the hospital, which for a lot of people can be very scary, right? That her instinct was to turn to the fundamentals that she'd learned from her experience at the silent retreat. That's what gave her a connection to God in that moment. I thought that was really fascinating about how powerful and impactful this had been for her.
Yeah, that whole idea that we might be prepared for what's coming by taking a moment out of our everyday. She talked about even making a little altar in that room, that she was very intentional about it. So now I want to answer the question that I asked before, which is, what would an ideal retreat be for you?
I, like Susan, love books. I feel like I would be bringing books with me, and I would be really excited about putting down my phone, though I would probably look for it every 14 minutes. Like, where is it? Where, you know, and then clutch it and pet it for a while. But I think it would be really great to be in a place where you could put down the electronics and you could just walk in peace on the grounds and contemplate.
This is hundreds of acres. You cannot see another building. You see going down the hill into the Shenandoah Valley and the Blue Ridge Mountains rising up on the other side. There are a little bit of lawns right around the retreat area. And if you walk through a little bit of a wooded area down a road around where the monks' chapel and their quarters are. Mm. Otherwise, a lot of it is pasture. And you'll see cows, as we heard.
Yeah, bring on the cows.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think ruminating with the cows sounds pretty ideal.
That could be the title of a retreat. She also mentions going to this right when she retired from being a priest and that she wished she'd had a whole other week. And times of transition in our lives, whether it could be health, whether it could be a job change, a marriage status change, you name it, is a really important time, I think, to take time to think. Many thanks to Reverend Susan Bentley for speaking with me. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Cap Perry, and Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katarina Martinich, Josh Orton, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Daniel Phillips, and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds sharing their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, why not leave a comment or review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts? That helps spread the word. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod. Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. Yep, we have a YouTube page, youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon right here in Good Faith.